Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Devadanti Munayah Sakshantatmindriyashayah Yadatad evasatarkais Tiro dhyeta viplutam. This is 41 and 40 and 41 Prabhupada combined together. The Sanskrit Vishuddham Kevalam Jnanam Tatyak Samyak Avastitam Satyam Purnam Anadyantam Nirgunam Nityam Advayam. Then Rishe Vedanti Munayaha. So the translation: the personality of Godhead is pure, being freed from all contaminations of material tinges. He is the absolute truth and the embodiment of full and perfect knowledge. He is all-pervading, without beginning or end, and without rival. So, remember he's been saying, one can only understand him in a limited way, because he's unlimited and we're limited. Now he's disclosing. Here's what he is. And then this part is restating what he said before. These are conditions where the individual soul can understand the unlimited. O Narada, O great sage, the great thinkers can know him when completely freed from all material hankerings and when sheltered under undisturbed conditions of the senses. Otherwise, by untenable arguments, asat tarkais, all is distorted, viplutam, and the Lord disappears from our sight. Tira dieta. So we heard last night about different classes of people where the Lord disappears from their sight. The empiric scientists that say all there is matter, and matter evolves to make complex matter, and complex matter evolves to make life, and God disappears. Tiro dieta and viplutam, everything becomes distorted by using asat tarkais, illusory arguments. So they need to be bumped up to this category over here, where completely free from material hankerings, good luck, and when sheltered under undisturbed conditions of the senses, indriya ashaya, indriya ashaya, and completely pacified, prashanta, prashanta and indriya ashaya. So those two, no longer having any material desire, and the senses are completely pacified, guess how that's accomplished? By devotional service and not otherwise. And that's what's discussed in the purport, and part of what's in the purport. If one has other positions than devotional service, bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, Sakale Ashanta, not Prashanta, but Ashanta. Lord Chaitanya's teaching in Chaitanya Charitamrita. How to get free from strong material hankering, whether it's for sense enjoyment, mystic powers, or just to get out of the place, like get released from this botheration. Liberation. It's another desire, another material desire. It's negation of material desires, like two sides of the same coin. Negation of material desire is another material desire. It's not the spiritual position, it's negation of the material position. That's not a spiritual position. What's the positive activity of the soul is not established, so there's no real shelter. And it, sakale ashanta, it serves to agitate the mind. Because as soon as something comes, and the mind's agitated because I'm not in this nowhere position. And Prabhupada explains this in the purport from the previous verse. It's not on the board. But pratyak samyag avastitam, very important. The Lord is everything. Pratyak samyak avastitam. Or a very nice way that Prabhupada elsewhere says the same thing. That is, there's no void in the creation of God. Or the same way to say, saying the same thing in another way. There is no such thing as void. Or saying the same thing in another way. There is God, and there is that which comes from God, and there's not a third thing. They're all statements saying the same, making the same point. And Buddhism and impersonalism say nirvishesh or shunyavad. Everything is without the presence of God's energies, or everything is nothing. It's saying the same thing. Therefore, impersonalism has covered Buddhism. And the modern scientists, they're nothing but impersonalists and Buddhists. There's nothing. Even to say all there is matter, you know, where does matter come from, and the laws that govern matter come from, the answer is they don't come from any place, they're primordial. The matter is. And that's all that there is. What's that? That's all there is. That means, literally it means that we're nothing. Because before matter got together in whatever it is that we think of ourselves now, some designation, we were nothing. And when that matter disassociates or deteriorates or dismantles, we're nothing. So what are we now? We're nothing. Viputam. Everything becomes distorted, and the Supreme Lord disappears. And that's what we're contending with in the modern society, where science is that which people have great faith in. They're spending so much money to build things, to go to outer space and take pictures, and billions to send people to Mars, and now they're going to go back to the moon. And billions of dollars for war toys. They can send something in space and explode something that can send a missile back to Earth. These are the same people that say everything is nothing. It's just child's play. But it's, you know, they're mad. Excuse me, but they're mad. And there's no God. So it doesn't really matter. It's quite okay just to play war games. excuse me for going off in this tangent. It's not at all what's in the purport, but next to molecular biology, nanotechnology is getting the biggest research money. And what's nanotechnology? They'll eventually use it for things like, you know, operations and medical stuff. But they just, that's after they get their war toys. So they can have little, you can't even see it, equipment that can go spying around and take pictures and fire weapons. And so, you know, nice young men and nice young ladies go to school and they, you know, they want to get their PhD, and so they go where they get the money. They get the money to make nanotechnology. That's just giving to these demoniac people all the toys to make war games. And then they sell it in the marketplace with other applications. You know, the government has the information, and they contract it out to different people, and then they can make, you know, different newer kinds of communications, and everybody's got to have one. You get the money back. But it's all just murderous, diabolical stuff. And, you know, so therefore this tussle in the courtrooms in America over can intelligent design be in the textbooks, and they're shouting, no! Because they want this stuff. It's really mean. It's insidious. I probably shouldn't be saying this from the Vyasasan, but that's what's going on. It's demoniac society. It makes Mahabharata like, you know, children in a sandbox. These people are playing for keeps, and they want to keep control. So this kind of message is to turn the corner so that there's actual, factual, spiritual, scientific messages about the personality of Godhead and how to actually perceive Him. And things like, you know, becoming free from material desire and controlling the senses are essential. Otherwise, tiro diet of the bhutam. And we, so, you know, what's wrong with the advancement of technology and science? So many good things. You have nice air conditioners when it gets too hot. And, you know, so many comforts. We can drive in cars and get from place A to place B really fast. Sometimes there's accidents, but, you know, you pay a price for everything. And wars going on all over the place over who's going to get the petrol. But, you know, there's a price for everything. We'll come up with another way of generating the energy and zoom, zoom. Because, science is going to figure it out for us. Because we got the desire and they've got the intelligence, and put those two things together and you get the products you want. Hey, it's good life. Little problems here and there, but not so. The Supreme Personality of Godhead disappears. So, and when He disappears, quality of life goes down. Like, really down. Really, really, really down. So, here we are, young and old, watching this thing happening, wondering, what are we going to do about this situation? And so we can just look for salvation, but we're not salvationists. We're Vaishnavas that are concerned about the condition, and so improving our condition and benefiting others at the same time. So propagating this message, hearing it, deeply understanding it, and making sure that as far as possible, others also have the chance to understand it and make a difference in this deteriorating condition of society. This is the practical application of what we're doing this morning. There's a lot of spiritual information in this purport. So as I'm going through the spiritual information in the purport, don't just put it into your information basket and walk out the door. Try to understand this is disclosing what otherwise would never be able to be understood, even to present it the first time by Lord Brahma. It's giving us a glimpse into spiritual reality. And, okay, so the first sentence in the purport sets the tone for the whole purport. Prabhupada writes, "Here is an estimation of the Lord apart from his transcendental activities in the temporary material creations." So what's coming up, like sneak preview of coming attractions, the next chapter is going to be about the Lord's incarnations. The whole chapter, just listing of incarnations, not elaborate description. That comes later. So, in anticipation of the Lord's incarnations, let us understand about the Lord. You know, how he acts in this world. We're allowed to understand the transcendental nature of the Lord as he acts in this world. We'll think of, it's just fantastic, like Marvel Comics or something. It's not. Or some mythology. It's not. It's the transcendent Lord. So what's the transcendent Lord apart from this material creation and his activities in this material creation? This verse, Lord Brahma, is setting the stage for understanding the Lord. And then, as he appears in this world. Now he continues the purport by saying, "Here's what Mayavadis say," and then he bashes it through the words of Lord Brahma. "Mayavad philosophy tries to designate the Lord as contaminated by a material body when he accepts forms of incarnation." Wrong. Put on your, you know, protective earplugs, because this is Mayavad philosophy. Mayavad philosophy says Brahman becomes covered. This, their doctrine is Vivarta Vada. Vivarta means covered. Vada means doctrine. The doctrine of Brahman becomes covered. So, once upon a time, there was Brahman. All there is Brahman. There isn't anything else but Brahman. And then something very amazing happened. Brahman got covered. And that Brahman covered is called Krishna. Or Rama, or Nrisimha, or Vishnu, or Narayan, or whatever. And then more covered becomes the living entity Jiva. But actually, you know what? There's no Jiva, there's no Krishna, there's no... All it is Brahman that gets covered. That's all it is. Don't ask me how Brahman gets covered, because the answer is going to be, it doesn't. Wait a minute. Brahman gets covered, Brahman doesn't get covered. If I'm God, how come I don't know that I'm God? It's because you're covered by Maya. You're covered by illusion. Well, if I'm God, how did I get covered by illusion? Well, you're not covered by illusion. You're Brahman. Because all there is Brahman, there's nothing else. Oh. So, that was my Vat philosophy. Now here's Lord Brahma. This sort of interpolation is completely denied herein by the explanation that the Lord's position is pure and unalloyed in all circumstances. So the verse that's not on the board is Vishuddham Kevalam. Vishuddham Kevalam is a strong word. Kevalam means absolutely. Kevala, we like Kevala Bhakti. And Shankara likes Kevala Advaita. That's his teaching. Kevala Advaita, absolute monism. Absolute monism. Here is Vishuddham Kevalam. That's the Lord. And now the Lord is distinct from the living entities. This is, we know chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita is called the most confidential knowledge. Yes? So there's confidential, more confidential, and most confidential. Confidential is knowledge of the soul. More confidential is the distinction that there's a soul and the Supreme Soul. Most confidential is what do the two, soul and Supreme Soul, do together? What does the soul do? What does the Supreme Soul do? What's the relationship? So this statement that's being made by Brahma is more confidential. That is, the individual soul does get covered. The Supreme Soul never becomes covered. Vishuddham Kevalam. So Vishuddham Kevalam rejects Mayavad doctrine that says Brahman becomes covered. Because Krishna, this confidential knowledge that one can understand to some degree through the medium of devotion and through the medium of becoming free from material desires and controlled senses, what Brahma already said, this is my condition because I've grabbed a hold of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is supreme pure. So he's protecting me. And now he's disclosing, this is the Lord. Vishuddham Kevalam. He never becomes covered. Even when he comes into this world, he never becomes covered. And when he's outside of this world in this Vaikuntha realm, he never becomes covered. He never becomes covered. There is a distinction between the jiva that becomes covered and Krishna that never becomes covered. This is more confidential knowledge. Next, according to Mayavad philosophy, the spirit soul, when covered by nescience, is designated as jiva. But when freed from such ignorance or nescience, he merges in the impersonal existence of the absolute truth. Then you don't have jiva anymore. All you have is Brahman. What is jiva? It's Brahman covered. What is Brahman? Brahman that's not covered. Actually, all there is Brahman. Mayavad. And there's no Paramatma either. That's just silly. There's no Paramatma. There's no two souls situated within the same body. Although the Upanishads say it, there's only one thing. You can't have two things. You can only have one thing. What's that one thing? Brahman. It's just imagination. It's just misunderstanding, misinterpreting. There's only one thing. Brahman. There's only one thing. So Lord Brahma refutes this idea in the following way. Here it is said that the Lord is eternally the symbol of full and perfect knowledge. Vishuddham Kevalam Jnanam. So it's Vishuddham Kevalam or Kevalam Jnanam. He is the embodiment of full knowledge. There's no question of becoming covered and becoming uncovered. He is full knowledge. In whatever form he appears, the Lord, that's not us, it's the Supreme Lord. This is his speciality, : perpetual freedom from all material contaminations. I'll share something with you. Two sannyasis once were having a vigorous discussion with Srila Prabhupada about the fall of the jiva. You know about that one, right? Fall of the jiva, that argument. Some group says jivas cannot fall. Prabhupada said jivas fall. And the scriptures say the jivas fall. Some people say It's not possible. How can you be, you know, the doubt that people have, how can you be in the spiritual world and leave the spiritual world to come here? You know, the perfected living being cannot make such a boo-boo mistake. Can't do it. Can't happen. Therefore, their idea is, there's these categories. There's the perpetually nitya buddha. There's the nitya mukta. One can go from the buddha to the mukta position, but you can't fall. And they write books about it. And, you know, argue about it. So, two sannyasis were discussing this with Srila Prabhupada. How is it possible? How is it possible? Prabhupada was giving answers and giving answers. Finally, he said, listen carefully, he said, the reason that you cannot understand this is because of a strong desire to equate the living entity with Vishnu. This is the distinction. Living entities can fall, Vishnu cannot fall. That's the way Prabhupada is saying it here in the purport is, this is the Lord's speciality. He cannot fall. And the living entities can fall. And some do and some don't. And what's the criterion for their falling? This is where it gets, you know, the non-fall vadas say, living entity misuses his free will. Okay, what's the prompt for misuse of free will as opposed to proper use of free will? It must be, you're saying then there's ignorance in the spiritual world that prompts the misuse of free will? There's no ignorance in the spiritual world. You can't have living entities misusing their free will and coming to the material world. It can't be. It has to be that just they're just perpetually here. That's it. The counter argument to that is, then this makes the Lord capricious. He's the source of all living entities, and some of you just go to hell. And some of you stay in the spiritual world. On what basis? No reason. You go to hell, you stay in the spiritual world. Hari Bol. The Lord is not whimsical like that. Living entities make choices. And what is the prompt for the choice is that it's within the living entity, not something outside the living entity. They have free will. And that's how they're different than Vishnu. Vishnu never misuses his unlimited free will. He's Purna Jnana. He's complete knowledge. And living entities are not. Although they're qualitatively like the Supreme, they're very tiny and they're in this Tathasta Shakti position, and they can, and some do. And here we are, we're proof. But we can also properly use our free will once again by the mercy of great souls and the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada goes on. This distinguishes the Lord from the individual common living entities who have the aptitude for being subordinated by nescience and thus becoming materially designated. So one of the things to become free from material existence is to let go of material designations. Sarvopati Vinir Muktam Tat Paratvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. It's part of what bhakti is letting go of upadi. That means thinking I'm this body. I'm American or Indian or whatever designation we want. It's not who we are. It's something that's the state of embodiment, but it's not who we are. Like we were discussing, that Akura was arguing with Dhritarashtra. You're thinking in terms of my sons, Pandu's sons. This is illusion. Whose sons were they before they were your sons? Now, whose sons will they be after they're gone? For some time, it looks to you like they're your sons. But this is ignorance. The fact of the matter is they're spirit, soul, eternal part and parcel of the Supreme, and you should act it with equal mindedness towards all living entities. And the Pandavas are the rightful heirs to the throne, so act according to what's right. Stop this ignorance program. But all living entities are acting covered by ignorance. That's the conditioned state of existence. May I make a request that anybody that has a mobile phone turn it off or in vibrate mode, please? In the Vedas it is said that the Lord is Vijnanam Anandam, or full of bliss and knowledge. The conditioned souls are never to be compared to Him, because such individual souls have the tendency to become contaminated. This is where the phrase, "it's all one," becomes so disturbing to the devotees. What it's doing essentially is dragging Krishna down to be one of us. That's dragging a superior down mentality is envy. They're envious of Krishna. So either I push myself up or bring him down. Like this fellow that's got his picture sitting on the throne of Anantasheshan instead of Lord Narayan, it's himself. Dog. Offensive. Put oneself in God's position or take God and bring one God down to one's position. So transcendental knowledge doesn't permit that. Although after liberation the living entity can become one with the same quality of existence as the Lord, his very tendency to become contaminated, which the Lord never has, makes the individual living entity different from the Lord. This is more confidential knowledge than just we're spirit soul. There is a distinction between the individual soul and the Supreme. In the Vedas it is said, Shuddham Apapa Vidham. Ishapanishad, right? The individual Atma becomes polluted by sin, but the Lord is never contaminated by sins. So when Krishna steals butter, not bad. It's Leela. He's actually bringing happiness to the elder gopis. They enjoy. And so he's playing. He's as if a small child. He's bringing them transcendental happiness. So they, as in their maternal way, can, oh, you Mother Yasoda, you better check Krishna. Why are you saying Krishna steals butter? Do you know how many cows Nanda Maharaj has? 900,000 cows? Do you think we don't have butter? Why would he come to your home and steal butter? It's not so. You just, it's something else, somebody else. No, no, it's Krishna. Then you catch him, and then I'll punish him. And so it goes. Then they conspire ways to catch Krishna. Krishna is always clever, and even when Mother Yasoda catches Krishna, she says it melts her heart. He smiles, or he cries, and it's over. It's just so. Or Krishna's dancing with the gopis, this beautiful mural of the Rasa Leela. For some worldly young boy, young girl to do something like that, it's immoral. When Krishna does, it's transcendental. These are expansions of his own internal potency, who he's dancing with. It's not another entity as a young boy, young girl. He's not bound by moral codes, nor does he create sin. And so on, and so on. So, to hold material yardsticks up to one who is beyond such yardsticks is a mistake. But to understand that, one has to understand who the Lord is. So before his leelas are going to be described next chapter, who he is needs to be known. Therefore, second canto comes before the tenth canto. The lotus feet of the Lord come before the smiling face of the Lord. He goes into this metaphor of the sun. The sun is pure, makes other things pure by its contact, and does not become impure by contact with the impure. The infected things are sterilized by the rays of the sun. Similarly, the Lord is never contaminated by sins. On the contrary, the sinful living entities become sterilized by contact with the Lord. Now, listen carefully if it gets intricate. This means that the Lord is also all-pervading like the sun. And as such, the word pratyak is used in this verse. It's not on the board, but it's Vishuddham Kevalam Jnanam Pratyak. And the statement, nothing is excluded from the existence of the Lord's potential expansions. And it's the same thing that I said. There is no void in the creation of the Lord. Void means nothing. So it's like saying Satan, you know, something that exists apart from God and has independent power and authority, and he's duking it out with God. And that's one Christian, at least some group of Christians have that idea. There's Satan and there's God, and there's competition between the two. There's no competition. There's nothing outside of God's existence. Nor is there nothingness. Whatever exists is God or gods. And there's not a third thing. Nothing is excluded from the existence of the Lord's potential expansions. That's pratyak, the meaning. Like the sun, all-pervading. The sun and the shine of the sun. The Lord is within everything because he's pratyak. He's also outside of everything. Because he's pratyak. He covers living entities through his energies. But he doesn't become covered because those are his energies. And while he covers the living entities, he doesn't become disturbed or covered himself. He is therefore infinite. And the living entities are infinitesimal. In the Vedas it is said that only the Lord alone exists. That sounds like monism. But that's not, it's a misunderstanding of that statement. It means there's God and his energies, or his expansions, and there's not a third thing. And all other existences depend on him. He's the generating reservoir for everyone's existential capacity. So he's within everything, he's outside of everything, and he is everything. That's pretty complete. And we can't say that about living entities, can we? But we can say that about the Lord, or at least Lord Brahma, because he proportionately understands the Lord. He has no material desire and he has senses under full control. He can understand this. But these other folks down here, they can't. He disappears and they become bewildered. He is the supreme truth of all other categorical truths. For example, he is the source of everyone's opulence. And therefore, no one can equal to him in opulence. He's Bhagavan, full of all opulences. Fame, beauty, knowledge, strength, and renunciation. Certainly he is the supreme person. Then Prabhupada takes that notion. He's the Supreme Person. So he's gone through, he's with inside everything, he's outside everything, he is everything. Pratyat. Therefore, being full of potencies, he's a person. Now he takes, there's five items he goes into with, he's a person. Because he is a person, he has personal qualities. Although he's transcendental to the modes, nirgunam, in the verse 40. Nirgunam. Personal qualities, but no material qualities. Saguna, nirguna. With spiritual qualities, without material qualities. Then, as evidence, Bhagavatam 1, 7, 10. Those of you familiar with the first canto know this is the Atmaram verse. Itam Bhuta Guno Harihi. Lord Hari has qualities that attract even the Atmaramas. They're spiritual qualities. Right? Like Shukadeva Goswami became attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam, although he was already Brahman realized. He had no interest in anything material. He was only interested in Brahman. But he became interested in the qualities of Krishna, because the qualities of Krishna are the quality of Brahman. They're spiritual qualities. Krishna's personality is all spiritual, but there's no material contamination. His transcendental qualities are so attractive that even liberated souls, Atmaramas, are also attracted by them. Although he possesses all personal qualities, he is nevertheless omnipotent. That means his potencies are also all spiritual. Therefore, it's like a lawyer making a case. Therefore, personally, he has nothing to do. For everything is being carried out by his omnipotent energies. Like Krishna says, same thing in Bhagavad Gita. I do this, I create. Chapter 3, Bhagavad Gita. The divisions of society and the process of sacrifice and generations of men and demigods. But actually I'm doing nothing. There's no duty that I must perform. One who has a desire has a duty to fulfill that desire. Krishna has no desires, no material desires, and so there's nothing for him to do, but everything happens by his potency. Or it doesn't happen. But whatever does happen is by his potency. And Krishna doesn't have anything to do. He has no obligation of something to do. And yet he does these things. Why? For the benefit of the living entities. That he, they're his dear sons or dear parts and parcel living entities, and so for their benefit he does. But in doing, it's not like we're doing something. He just wishes. And so it is. So then he quotes, Prasya Shakti Vividaiva Shuyate Subhaviti Jnana Balakriyacha. Then he rests his case by the following statement. This suggests that his specific spiritual form, which can never be experienced by material senses. One has to have purified senses. It's a long purport. Maybe I should end and continue another time. He keeps going down this path of disclosing the Lord, disclosing about the Lord, because he's going to appear, and we don't want to get the wrong idea when he appears. We're going to have the right idea. I'll keep going. He can only be seen when the senses are purified by devotional service. Yam evaisha vinute tena labhya. As such, there are basic differences between the Lord and living entities in so many respects. No one can be compared to the Lord as the Vedas declare. Ekam eva dutiyam brahma, or dvaitadvai bhayam bhavati. The Lord has no competitor, and he has nothing to fear from any other being, nor can anyone be equal to him. Also, then he summarizes, although he's the root of all beings, this Pratyak, there are basic differences between him and other beings. He just spent a whole bunch of time detailing some of those differences. Otherwise, there would have been no necessity from the statement in the previous verse that no one can know him 100% as he is, only partially, proportionately to one's surrender. Nayam vedanti tatvena. That no one can fully understand him is also explained in this verse. But the qualification for understanding to some degree is mentioned here. There's one of them, Prashanta. And then Prabhupada explains Prashanta is peaceful. And as long as you have desires, you're not peaceful. You have material desires, you're not peaceful. Have desires for mystic powers, you're not peaceful. Have desires for, I want out of here, liberation. You're not peaceful. But devotees alone are peaceful because they have just this one desire. It is a desire, but it's not a material desire. It's the constitutional position of the soul to serve the Supreme, and therefore, whatever the external circumstances are, situated in that consciousness, the mood of humble service to the Supreme, in any circumstance, they can remain peaceful. And those that are fixed do remain peaceful. Prahlad remained peaceful. Maharaj Ambarish remained peaceful. Haridas Thakur remained peaceful. Great souls remain peaceful. Prashanta. Because they know the Lord will protect me. And the Lord protects one who is so dependent upon the Lord. Always. So that's in another part of the purport. And then this full control of the senses, because they're under the shelter of the Lord, and he's being pure, gives protection to the senses. The senses don't act in an agitating way anymore. Even the senses may come in contact with the objects of the senses, like Ramananda Roy decorating with his own hand the bodies of the Devi Dasis, so he can train them to perform drama that describes the pastimes of Krishna. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami explains that he had the mentality, his consciousness was that of a gopi decorating another gopi to perform pastimes with Krishna. So his body was not agitated through his senses. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, a normal person, even seeing a doll in a window, a mannequin dressed, the mind becomes agitated and the body becomes transformed. Not Ramananda Roy. He's on another plane of consciousness that's not ordinary. And the Bhagavatam is explaining how we can have that consciousness also by full submission and surrender in the mood of service to the Lord. Then these conditions can be achieved, and then this condition can be reached. One can understand, at least to some extent, what the previous verse, text 40, was detailing. And then we won't even consider, hey, maybe this argument between the scientists and the theists has some merit. One doesn't become bewildered. So, I've gone way over time. I'll end the class and see if there's any discussion.
During that, the living entity falling, the saying that God will be capricious if the living entities, or some of them are in hell and heaven, etc., etc. We also hear from Srila Prabhupada that there are some living entities who are in the internal potency.
Some living entities that are?
That are Nitya Siddhas.
Yeah.
They never fall.
It's by their choice.
Yeah. And there are some other living entities who are marginal.
No, no. They're all marginal.
All living entities.
All living entities. Marginal. Of those living entities who are marginal, Tathastha Shakti, some are in this category, Nitya Siddha. Some are in that category, Nitya Baddha.
And what is the distinction of Lord? Lord has different energies that marginal energy, internal energy.
He places those marginal energies under the shelter of his internal or external energy depending upon their free will choice.
Okay.
And those that are Nitya Siddhas, they're under the care of the internal potency. Those that have misused their free will, they're in the care of the external potency. With remedial program. Get it together, living entities. It's not nice over here. Go over here. But you insist, then, okay, here's your illusory happiness. See if you like it. Those two things. So what's the purpose of creation? Those two reasons. Remedy and opportunity to try it out. Fulfilling the desires of living entities, independent enjoyment from the Supreme.
Guru, when Krishna is doing everything for his own good, why do you fail to recognize this truth and how we can remove the stumbling block in our devotional life?
How can we remove something bad from our devotional life?
No, no. When Krishna is doing everything for our own good,
Krishna is doing everything for our own good,
then why we fail to recognize that fact?
Why we fail to recognize that fact?
And how we can remove this stumbling block?
It's ignorance. There's no good reason. Try to find a good reason, you won't find one. There's no good reason. Misuse of free will doesn't have good reason. It's rebelliousness. Wait a minute, why be rebellious from a loving relationship? There's no good reason. And how to get over it? Recognize it's a bad program. And there's a good program. Let me get on board with a good program. And that's, you know, through the assistance of those who are in that position. You get that mercy and then you can get the extra strength necessary to get out of the bad program. Mercy. Don't run around with your mercy basket. Catch a bunch of drops of mercy falling from the sky. I have a doctor.
My two questions. First one is, how do we understand in this context of fall of the jiva?
The topic of?
Fall of the jiva.
Oh boy, okay.
Because I've been asked this question many times.
Yeah.
How do we understand when Krishna says, yat gatvana nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. Once you reach that, you will never return back.
The answer that Prabhupada gave is two things. The living entity in that position is still marginal. They're still tathastha, which means they still have the potential of misuse of free will. Part two is Krishna gives his promise to protect that living entity, so if they don't misuse their free will because they've learned their lesson, but if there is some accident, Krishna protects because he gives his promise. Krishna gives his promise. That's the protection. Still the living entity is marginal, still the living entity has free will, still living and he has can go this way or that way because living entities are eternally tathastha shakti. They don't become something else. Next.
How do we understand this nitya baddha term? Because
it has to do with the word anadi. There are two ways of looking at anadi. Absolutely eternal, or so far back in time you cannot find trace the beginning. And it's a second sense. Because go that way in time, the Nitya Bhadra can become liberated. Yes? That is one of the fundamental teachings of Vaishnava life. Otherwise, it's useless. Because we're Nitya Bhadra. So go the other direction in time. Therefore, anadi in the sense of you cannot trace the beginning. Yes. Hare Krishna. There's some people behind that may not be able to hear you.
Supreme Lord marginal energy.
Supreme Lord's marginal energy, that's
exists,
us.
Exists in the spiritual world or
exists
in the...
Exists in the spiritual world and the material world. That was his question. The Nitya Siddha living entities in the spiritual world, they're marginal potency. Okay?
Why does Krishna gives us independence?
So that there can be love. And because and another answer is because we're part and parcel of him and he has supreme independence. He want to, like, okay, we're part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, except in this category of independence. Then we're something other than part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. If we're part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, whatever quality he has, we have. Just in a minute quantity. So we have tiny free will, and he has unlimited free will. Because we're part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. That's why we have minute free will. And the other answer is, in that proper execution of free will, there's love. If you said, no deal, no free will, then there's no love. But there is love. In the spiritual world, there is a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. And therefore, free will means there's free will. I can say no. And that's what this place is. People that said no. It's like little children when they learn the word no. I was watching one kid. I don't want to. He just, you know, whatever it was. I don't want to. It wasn't no, it was a softer no. I don't want to. You know, and that's to their parents who are saying, let's go here, now it's time for prasadam, or whatever it is. Don't make noise. I don't want to. He's exercising the option of saying no. It's inherent in the living entity because the living entity is part and parcel of the supreme living entity who has unlimited free will. Behind you, there's a hand up.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Actually, now I am going to ask a very common and somewhat peculiar question. That is, the avatars, that is, Krishna, Rama, and the many Shiva, like this, there are avatars, so many gods. So, I want to know who is the supreme Lord. He is the origin of this Lord.
Okay.
Yeah.
According to the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, the different avatars are identified, not exhaustively, but some number of them in the first canto, chapter 3. At the end of that list, Shukadeva Goswami says, of all these different avatars, one of them is the source of all of them. Krishna. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. So on the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is avatari and all others are avatars. And we can detail that some more, but that's the Bhagavatam's answer. And so our acharyas, particularly Jiva Goswami, says this is a very important statement that comes in the very beginning or the early part of the whole Bhagavatam, so that when we hear other descriptions that come later, we need to understand those other descriptions in light of this description, or this statement, this utterance, Mahavakya, a principal utterance. There's more that can be said, but that's the statement of the Bhagavatam. Yes?
Maharaj, Krishna is promising that one who returns his palm, he never fall down.
And this
again
is Garvandaksha's question.
Yes. It means he is promising his protection. And also, just now you said, still there is the tendency to fall down again.
Yes, because the living entity is marginal.
Then how come that protection was not there at first place?
It is. The protection is Krishna. So let's say you have a child, and so your child does something naughty. Sometimes, right? And you have to correct your child. And you have some discussion with your child, and you say, let's not do that again, and I'll be forgiving. Well, how come you weren't forgiving before? How come you didn't give your protection to me before? I thought I was giving you the right instruction, but you decided otherwise. And now we're going over what it means when you disobey good instructions. Krishna makes a promise, and he holds his promise. Anything else? Yes.
We people commit mistakes normally. So to avoid that, what we have to do, and what is the result after knowing that it is bad, doing that? So
there's a long answer, but we don't have time. So I'll give you a short answer. The short answer is devotional service. The question that you ask, you just asked, you can read the first chapter of the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Maharaj Pariksit asked that question of Shukadeva Goswami. There are ways to counteract mistakes. It's called prayaschitta. But counteracting mistakes by karmakanda methods of atonement don't take away the tendency to make the same mistakes again, or other mistakes. So then the consideration might be knowledge. But even people who have knowledge don't always do what they know they should do, including ourselves. We don't always do what we know we should do, or we do things we know we shouldn't do. So knowledge alone is not enough. Atonement by Vedic processes is not enough. The conclusion that Shukadeva Goswami gives to Maharaj Pariksit's question is devotional service. Not only corrects the reaction, and not only checks the tendency, it uproots the tendency. Because in place of that tendency is the natural condition of a living entity, that is their loving relationship with the Supreme. Once again established in that loving relationship with the Supreme, such tendency is uprooted. Problem solved. Reaction problem, tendency problem, the whole problem is solved. Devotional service. Anything from the ladies' side? Yes?
And if we pray to Krishna and beg for a benediction that we should never misutilize our free will, does he grant us?
Pray to Krishna for the benediction that we should never what? There's a loud machine out on the street. A little louder.
That we should, I should never misutilize my free will ever again.
Yeah. Well, no. You want to misuse your free will. We want to use our free will. Choose Krishna. Krishna, please protect me. The protection, please help me. Of course, it's my choice, but please help me to make the right choice. And that's the same question that's been asked twice already. To return to Krishna, that means we've made that choice. We've learned our lesson. Misuse of free will is a bad program. Happiness apart from Krishna is illusion. It's worse than illusion. It's only suffering. Happiness apart from Krishna doesn't exist. Please keep me always engaged in your devotional service. That's the same prayer. Please keep me always engaged in devotional service. Same as what you said. Let my desire always be that one. Please help me. Please protect me. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.